We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. Glad to be back. This is Terry Diabolic, one half your host. Finger on the pulse, staring at DJ Never Forget, who just broke a mic stand.
I won't put that on air.
I mean, you gotta, you know, live and die by your actions, you know what I'm saying?
This thing is really broken.
What did you do?
It just snapped. Not me. Someone booby trapped it.
Oh, okay. It's good to be back. San Francisco was a wild ride. I can't say what I'm working on, but it was fantastic.
Oh, I already told everybody everything.
No, you didn't. I heard the shows.
Damn it.
Anyway, big shout out.
Hush, hush.
I want to just send a big shout out to my team who just totally crushed it this week and looking forward to doing more work and having a good time. And we have in studio with us a very awesome guest who I met over the summer at the. Did we forget the name? Was it Champagne?
Chefs and Champagne.
Chefs and Champagne. This very decadent and very awesome event. We have Sean Fletcher. Sean, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks.
Good so, to be here. Can I call you a Renaissance man? I can call you Renaissance man.
Yeah, sure.
So, Sean, I guess your tie to the foodie world is that you have been a volunteer with the James Beard Foundation for the last 12 years. And for those who don't know what the James Beard Foundation is, can you please explain what that is?
Well, it's basically James Beard, pretty famous American chef, kind of put American cuisine on the map. When he died, Julia Childs, Peter Kampf, a few other famous culinary dignitaries of the city got together, bought his house, turned it into a sort of a clubhouse for foodies, wow. basically. But at the same time, they raised money for scholarships for young chefs and other things as well, kind of give back to the community. So, but in the meantime, it's like a different chef every night comes in, and you get this amazing meal, which you got to take part of.
Yes, it was the chili dinner with from this restaurant from Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, right near where we grew up.
Is it open 365 days a year, or how?
Not. It the less goes on in the summer,
right?
But, it's usually four or five nights a week at least throughout the year.
How do they select the chefs?
The chefs are invited. It's a committee thing. It used to be you had to be a member of the house. To be one of the chefs invited, but I'm not sure what the specific rules are on that now. But basically a committee reviews like up-and-coming chefs and events and chefs that are opening new restaurants or, you know, this sort of thing, and then they decide who comes in. They're planned usually out about a year and a half in advance. Yeah. Even.
Can you make an analogy for those who might understand what they're like, how big of a deal it is to be invited to, if you were to make a music analogy?
Well, they would say, basically, you know, the opera singers have the Metropolitan Museum or the Metropolitan Opera, some musicians have Carnegie Hall. This is that for chefs.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's I had read about the James Beard House for years, and it was walking in as like the same time I walked in like Chez Panisse or anywhere else that you just read about, and you're like, wow, so much of what has shaped American food started here. Well, James was a big figure, literally. And
yes, and figuratively. Yeah.
And I think one of the most exciting features. Well, explain the James Beard shower in his house.
Okay, well, James is a bit of an exhibitionist. We've got a picture. This guy is over 6 feet tall, probably a good 300 pounds. He really, really loved to eat, and not much else. And one of the things he didn't really enjoy was putting clothes on. But he has this beautiful little row house down on West 10th, West 12th. And he has out on the back a big greenhouse, and go upstairs to the balcony that leads into what used to be his living room. But now it's a dining room. But the shower is actually outside on the balcony, you know, with
really?
The
yeah,
exposed to the greenhouse and then God and everybody.
Oh yeah, it's like you read about the shower and then you see it, and it's as open as it is in your mind. It's way more open. But now it's in the staging area, right?
Now it's basically they actually have some tables on that balcony because that whole second floor is a dining area. But they'll set up the table for the wine and stuff in front of it. Nobody's actually showering there anymore.
That's a shame.
That's a total shame.
It's a shame.
Can you shower there?
It's a working shower. It's a functioning shower. And actually, it's the bathroom is the room kind of behind it. So he could have very easily had it
maybe
inside.
Maybe that's like the VVVIP. I'm going to say, if that shower is working, someone shower there. I'll lock up. Yeah. So how did you get involved with the James Beard House? You know, what was, you know, I mean... Because, you know, 12 years ago, I mean, you know, honestly, you've been there for 12 years, and a lot of people who are in the food industry now, not food industry, but people who are foodies, especially a younger group of people may not know what the James Beard House is, especially 12 years ago, even less people knew about it.
Well, it was, originally, it was a really tight, pretty exclusive group of people, and they didn't advertise much, and they, it was, you really had to already know about it. You wouldn't pick up Facebook and see a page on it. Like now they have a blog and they really kind of put the word out. So I found an article in the paper one time, and it was all about things to do, you know, free in New York City, and how to get a free haircut by going to the haircut school or, you know, all these things. And they put it in there as how to get free cooking lessons, which I knew was probably not the case because they really can't afford to have somebody who doesn't know how to cook in there putting these really fancy meals together. But I thought, wow, what a great way to be working with all these amazing chefs that are coming through town and you know, get to cook food that I'm sure not going to make at home for myself. So I started making the phone calls. And, of course, when they heard that, you know, it was being listed as free cooking lessons, they, you know, screamed and yelled and were aghast. But I was persistent. I got in there. They gave me some really, really softball assignments. I got in there and, you know, I had my own knives. I had the skills. I proved myself. And so...
What's a softball assignment at James Beard House?
Well, the first gig I had was a brunch where some woman was promoting a cookbook about eggs. Every dish had eggs. Hmm. Like, so six-course meal, everything consisted of eggs. I was really glad I didn't have to go home with any of those people that ate that meal. That sounds awful. No, like eggs on pizza, some scrambled eggs, this, and like, you know, it was a while back. I don't remember the exact menu, but it was a brunch, so it was pretty casual food. I think it was probably some kind of eggy cheesecake thing.
But, yeah, I'm not mad at that.
But I mean, it was a lot of eggs.
So wait, so what was your assignment?
Well, but you know, basically, when you walk in there, you never know what your assignment's going to be.
Right.
So when I started out, now I photograph for the house primarily. But at the time, I was cooking. So you go in there and whatever they need done. So it depends on how prepared the chef is. You may spend the whole day like, you know, scrubbing oysters, or you may like a couple times I've done the house meal. There was a chef came in from Ireland once and proceeded to live up to all the stereotypes and get completely shit-faced drunk and sit on the counter and say, fuck 'em. I don't know if I can say it on the show here.
You can say it on the show.
Okay, dude. Basically sat on the counter and I cooked the whole meal. I learned, stuffed cabbage, which I had never made before and probably will never make again for 60 good. People. While the guy sat and got...
How many people,
sauced on
how many
the counter.
People can eat at the James Beard House? What's
well, we used to get upwards of close to 100 people in there. I mean, they would fit as many people as they could. Now I think they max out at like 85.
Well, how about this? We're going to take a quick break, a musical interlude, and we're going to come back. I want to talk to you about some more behind-the-scenes stories and then your photography work with James Beard House. And, and anything else that you want to talk about.
Temples that I built for you, and I sang songs of praise and love, and I sang songs of burying you alive, and see I had to tear it down.
Oh,
So we are joined by Sean Fletcher, photographer, bon vivant, cook extraordinaire. And over the break, you were telling us another behind-the-scenes tale from the James Beard House. I'd love you to share it with
me. Okay, my favorite story from all the nights of working there. You know, we got to have a... It's generally goes off really smoothly because these chefs prepare so well in advance and everything, but there's always that one thing that can happen. And we had David Thompson, this amazing chef from Australia that does Thai food, had come in, and he, you know, we spent all day working on this beautiful meal. One of the main components of it was this consomme, this chicken broth that was going to be basically a component to every dish throughout the whole meal. Big pot of it back on the back stove, and you know, we're simmering these chickens, we're skimming and doing all that, just constantly paying all this attention to it. Had the chickens out of it, sitting on the burner there, and by then we'd gotten it so pristine, so clear, so beautiful, well, that the dishwasher thought it was dirty water and dumped it down the sink.
Oh, yeah.
He thought we were through with it once we took the chickens out, and so we go back there, and there's this shiny, clean, empty pot that, you know, is supposed to, again, serve this, you know, huge house full of people. And again, a component in every single dish of the night. Of course, Chef went ballistic. He was bouncing off the walls. Like, he tried to fire everybody. He's, he's cussing in Australian, in Thai, in English, in languages I don't think I've ever even heard of before. And, of course, the dishwasher barely spoke any English. Definitely didn't speak any Thai. And everybody else is just stunned. Like, we don't know what to do. You know, we're just the volunteer help. But we luckily hadn't thrown out the chickens. So we, you know, from scratch again, just wrung those things out, like, you know, for every last little microbe of flavor that was in there. We got them down. We made a broth. And, you know, no one was really the wiser, but they didn't get that beautiful heavenly experience. They got kind of purgatory, I guess would be a
purgatory consomme. Love it. So now your role is less in the kitchen and more as a photographer.
Right.
And how did you make that transition? And you know, talk to us a little bit about, like, shooting food at the house.
Well, it was, you know, they kind of found out that I, you know, did the photography as well. And I was thinking, you know, the volunteer thing is really more for culinary students. They get some exposure and they get some credit for doing it. So I felt like I was kind of taking a, you know, something they should be doing. And the photography thing is, there's a group of us that do it, and they have a schedule over the course of the month. Everybody gets a night or two a month then, and you go in and you shoot each course, try to get some background, get the chef, get a group shot, and then, you know, the chefs use that for their publicity and the house uses it. But it's a challenge because it's you know, they're cranking out 90 meals out of this really tiny kitchen, and you have like five or six courses. There is not a lot of time in between any of them, and you're trying to, you know, shove yourself in among all these, like, you know, knives and flying arms and sauces and garnishes and everything else, and trying to get that little, like, you know, perfect Kodak moment of this dish before, like, the ice cream melts or before the, you know, gravy breaks or whatever, all these things that can happen so quickly. And it's a guerrilla photography, but it's a challenge and it's a lot of fun. And I get to...
Has your work been displayed from it at all, or have you done a presentation of it?
Oh, I haven't shown the well, I mean, it's published on the Beard blog.
Okay.
And in their... materials, and I don't know how many of the chefs have used photos of mine,
right.
But it's you know, it just kind of goes out there. Personally, I don't have a...
Now, if I wanted to get involved with the James Beard House, what's the best way to go about that?
You would want to... You mean as a diner?
As a diner, and then also, yeah, as a diner or working for them.
Okay, well, there is, you know, there's a website. There's, you know, there's a blog, and then there's a website with specific links to all the menus and all the making arrangements, reservations for anything, you know, that's coming up in the next couple of months. And then, of course, there's a link to the scholarships. There's a link to the volunteer opportunities. And there are more volunteer opportunities. There's a library that they keep. There's administrative opportunities for volunteers. So it's not everything is about hands-on with the food.
And if I wanted to just eat...
And for just eating, that's the easiest part, because it's a member-driven organization, but as the, you know, they just have a member, non-member pricing tier. So you pay a little more as a non-member, or you can, you know, become a member, you get notified of things more in advance and that sort of thing. But it's just as easy, again, as just going on the website. Like, say, the calendar's there. You can see what's coming up, and they're usually themed. So like ours was that hot pepper night. There'll awesome. Be like New England night, or there'll be vegetarian nights, or they're even doing some gluten-free things now and really branching out from just the old fancy caviar and foie gras.
I mean, that's a lot of nights of service, so I would think that you'd have to mix it up a little bit.
Well, it's a different chef every night, but since a lot of chefs cook seasonally,
right?
There have been times where I was volunteering like over the course of every night in a week, and every night was a different chef, but every night was venison and foie gras.
Right.
So there was variety, but it was, you know, they're all cooked differently, but you know, sometimes right. seasonally, if you're going in at a lot of the, you know, over the tight period of time, you're going to get some repetition in that respect, but it is always different.
Yeah. Hmm. All right, Sean, well, thank you so much. Do you have a website or anything, or any work? Where can we direct people to find you online?
No, I haven't gotten around to that yet.
All right.
That's one of these days.
One of these days. All right. Well, Sean, thank you so much. Stick around. We got some pizza, and We Are Augustines coming up after the musical break. What is going on?
Just nothing. I'm a
mess. You understand that we do every week. You can just change your iPod setting. Don't give me the hand. Don't give me that look.
Keep going.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, We Are Augustines coming up later, and then we also have a very special guest. At the end of the show, we have an Australian band, just digging up the name, Damn Dogs, coming in for a couple songs and a couple chats, if you will. Thank you.
So most bands, you know, get one shot and get to some, you know, fame and then kind of just go away. You guys are kind of on, you're on your second leg, in my opinion, as like another band or anything. So how are you approaching it differently this time?
If it, it has to be important to us for our time these days. Well,
so as opposed to before where...
We're just getting dragged along behind of the indie school bus there, dragging us through hell and high water, breaking our bank accounts and for pretty much free beer. So that those bullshit days are over, and we want to live our life with intention and purpose and feel good about what we're doing.
I mean, people love you guys. I know that other people like bands, but I know that you have a very, very loyal group of fans and supporters in the, you know, indie school bus world, even though things go specifically KXP, who's been huge champions of you guys.
And many others.
And many others.
They've helped so many people.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing, you know, like, you know, do you approach the shows differently, tours differently, or is that kind of...
Yeah, we're doing everything. It's like, we decided to do 3 people instead of 5, so that makes, like, being able to get to things like this in a car, like, so much faster. We kind of, like, got to sit, we just got to chill out for a year and look at it completely different, and I think that sometimes when bands get rolling, there's no time to stop, right? Like, you're either trying to hold down a job or you're touring, and there's no time to stop and reassess stuff. You're just going. So Eric and I quit drinking for, like, 6 months, stopped hanging out. Like, our phone certainly didn't, like, ring off the hook when Paylet ended. I thought people would ask if, like, we'd be trying to get, like, see if we could play with them or guest on their records or nothing. Thanks, New York.
Thanks, New York. I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, I feel like that's anything in, like, the creative world. Like, if you're in it, you're in it. But once you're out, people are just kind of like
they just keep
blinders
going.
On. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know how to say it. Like,
well, also it changes. I mean, it's you know, it's like those people are like early 20s who are your champions and they move on and next thing. And then it's like these new round of people.
Yeah.
Like, I was at Treasure Island this weekend and DFA 79 was on the headliners on the side stage. And, you know, there was nobody there under their late 20s. I mean, because they just stopped. And then, like, I mean, they haven't put out anything new. They didn't put out a new thing when they got back together.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I was like, and even the person I was with, who was 2 or 3 years younger than me, was like, yeah, I mean, I heard of them, but I wasn't in it. And so it's sort of like, if you're not in it, which, you know, I mean, I think you guys, and we were talking about before we went on, like, it was a very specific time in our lives.
Yeah,
like, if you weren't in that time or that scene, it was just like.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I think that's what, well, what goes back to, like, when we started. The difference between then and now is knowing all of that, knowing that everyone disappears when you're not the name on the blog anymore or whatever, and knowing that your entire existence in many ways is purely digital and it will just be wiped out the minute you're done. Why on earth would you want to participate in that kind of world? Because it's such a trite, superficial world. So we had to ask ourselves why we would want to do that, and getting to that core place where you realize that. Even, you know, most people, when they play music, is because they love it. And when they're kids, they connect to it on some level, and it makes them, like, kind of feel life a little differently. And then the industry kind of has this game with you, and it makes you hate it. And a lot of people become bitter, become self-absorbed or whatever, or just get totally lost. And, you know, why on earth would you want to go back into that? And reconnecting with why we play music and why we're here was the foundation of what we're doing right now. So that's really the biggest difference.
The sad part about it is that it's not the music's fault. The music's like the pure thing, and everything else is kind of silly.
So what type of, like, opportunities and, like, shows are you pursuing now that you might have, like, just been like, nah, we're not interested in that?
There's been offers to play ever since the band started, and we've just not really feeling like going over that patch of land. We've already done that, and so we started touring in the UK and kind of worked our way back from the UK to here, so it's worked out really nicely.
Okay, so can we hear another song?
Sure.
Hey, old man turned and scratched his chin, said, son, I wouldn't know where to begin. But your daddy's gone, he's gone down south. Was all he would talk about. We never blamed it on the soil. The sun burned earth, or the prices of the oil. This border town is my home. I got rattlesnake guts in a desert full of bones. Now my sister, I go and find someone. So I won't come back no more, no more. Lord, I see red, the storm in my head. I got cathedrals in my ears. I think my daddy's dead. Lord, I see red, I'm praying on my bed. I got a drum for mama, got a saint for brother. Now the sun is shining on my hood. The statue on the dashboard of Maria looks beautiful. And I'm heading down south. Got tequila in my veins and the devil in my mouth. Tell my sister I've gone to find someone. So won't come back no more, no more. Lord, I see red. It's storming in my head. I got cathedrals in my ears. I think my daddy's dead. Lord, I see red. I'm praying on my bed. I got a drunk old mama, got a saint for a brother. But hey, it's alright. I got jukebox tears and stones for us. Hey, it's alright. I got jukebox tears under turquoise skies. Hey! So now I got hell on my trail. Took some demons to get even. Now my demons count rosaries. We never blamed it on the soil. The sun scorched earth where the desert meets the sky. Tell my sister I'm going to find someone. So I won't come back no more, no more.
That sounded great.
Thank you.
As you enter back into the studio.
Well, we have Damn Dog showed up, and I wanted to get them some pizza.
And you got a cookbook. So, CMJ is upon us, yes, as it happens every year.
You're not saying it right. It's CM Hay.
Wow.
Wow, I've never heard that before.
And you've been listening to Snacky Tunes. I am out. Between you and Billy, I can't win today.
Let's be honest. Like, shows are sort of secondary at CMJ. It's not really...
What's primary?
Getting your name on a flyer.
Which is pretty much everything that We Are Augustines just said that they are not pursuing.
I know, but I'm just saying that, like, you guys are doing it right because you guys have selected, like, but, like, so many of the shows are just, like, it's a pain in the ass to load in. The majority of New York doesn't care. It's not like Austin when, like, the entire city is, like, ready for South By. Mm-hmm. Or it's, like, a festival when it's just, like, you're in a location. Like, that's... CMJ is, like, a very tough thing to play.
I think we realized that we are background music. After all these years, we kind of finally realized that no one really cares.
I don't know. I mean, I might be biased, but I think, full disclosure, because I work for the Ace Hotel, we're partnering with KEXP. You guys are playing there on Wednesday.
Yep.
I think those opportunities are awesome. But then again, it's because, you know, 50, 100 people might show up because, mm-hmm, you know, limited space, or because you guys are playing at 11 in the morning.
Sure.
But then it lives on in the ether and is recorded and things, sure, like that. But playing the 8 p.m. slot on Thursday at Pianos, maybe mm-hmm. maybe not but, as
to not to come full circle like this is the topic, right? Like it's really nice kind of having done it and looking at things going, you know, I want things to have meaning. Like I right. want them to mean something.
But I mean, I would say this, we had JD Sampson, who used to be in La Tigre or still is in La Tigre and was a man, and talking about second comings or things like that. It's like you're starting over in the sense that like people might not know the name, but you already have the relationships, mm-hmm. which actually, and you know, the ones that are good.
Yes. Sir.
And as opposed to the ones that are bad, which we talked about before.
Yes, we did.
And that is, well ahead of the curve than like a starting point being like, hi, yeah. please try and listen to us, which yeah. is like great because you guys get the opportunities to play KXP without having to put the 5 years of just having them to like hear your songs first.
No, but you put in the 5 years. I mean, it's all about moving forward, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we started with when Pele broke up, we realized we were surrounded by vultures and it was up to us.
Just to put it, loosely, just yeah. in the nicest terms possible.
But it was up to us to change that perspective. And then at the same time that we were surrounded by vultures, the minute we changed our perspective, we realized we were surrounded by people who supported us and loved us and would do anything they could to help us. And
they're
we just
there.
Simply went towards them.
I mean,
you know?
Billy,
and all of a sudden we have
yeah, I mean,
like a whole different perspective on music.
Exactly. And you got in two serious accidents. And there's yeah. still what I thought was great about that is like you got an accident. You guys had to pause.
Mm-hmm.
You came back and there were people there, and you got into another accident. Mm-hmm. And there were people there. And that to me was like one of the most heartwarming things.
Yeah.
That people were just like, yeah, we'll just wait.
I know. I thought it was really noteworthy that living in a city this big, it's really, I try to explain it to people when we're not here, like actually what it's like to actually live in New York. And there's like basically like, you know, areas that have their own scene, their own tempo, their own vibe. But the fact that like a music community at large actually helped me. I mean, that wasn't, I think that surgery was like 15 grand.
Which one of the two surgeries? The hand surgery?
The hand one, yeah.
Yeah.
So like that was actually, I felt like a very, it would have been a really awesome write-up, but like no one really gave a shit. I thought it was fantastic that there is a music community, even though it doesn't always feel like one.
Right.
And they actually really stepped up. So it was actually really something to be proud of.
You know how it is with the, you know, it's so much about the bad story, not the good story.
Yeah.
The accident was reported, not the aftermath.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think exactly. I mean, wasn't that the case though?
Yeah, well that I mean it also to go back to Augustine's for a second, like it really took a village to raise the band in a way, because we started a listener supported model to get our band off the ground. We didn't do band camp, we totally did our own thing and reached out and we designed our own website.
Which is an awesome website, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really good.
But we just had to basically, I don't know if anyone's even listening, but in the music world or for the food folks are listening, but I guess what I would say to people who are doing it or starting it, just don't underestimate the power of like your friends. And I know you've been hearing that for years, but like even people that headline the Bowery or do radio or whatever, like even those guys like need to ask for help from their friends and give back. Also, if you get a chance to like help other bands out, do it. And I don't know if what you got in mind that like New York's going to be some like kind of fancy cakewalk where everyone gets to hoe down and get drinks and chase girls and stuff. Like, get rid of that model. It's lame. Like,
it doesn't work.
It's lame.
I think that's a good note to take us out before. Hold on a second, before we play a song,
because yeah.
I know they ever say that. Let's give people the you know, what's the website, how to follow, how to get in contact, how to book you for gigs.
Well, there's
where to buy the record, which has been out since this summer.
I keep hearing about this. There's like this website, something called about face, some face.
The so, Facebook.
Oh, book? That one. Yeah.
Wait, what book?
The People Book.
It's really. It's supposedly it's really popular.
Hey, I heard. Keep an eye on it, and if you got money, just wait.
There might be something in there.
Might be something.
I hear they're making a movie about it too. I'm
yeah, sure. Documentary. No, there we go. High five.
I'll try this again.
Hold on. Website.
We are Augustines.com.
It's like it's spelled.
Can't miss.
Awesome. And we're gonna have you play a song. They're gonna play a song for Damn Dogs, and they're gonna be in here 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Cool. Okay.
Great.
Awesome.
The name of the song before you guys.
Thank you to Sean Fletcher.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
Who's got literally like the best shirt on of all time?
It's plaid yeah. pearl buttons with bees.
Is there something else we could play? This is a new song.
If you're tired heart now, darling, lift it up into the air. And I will notice you in this crowded room and whisper in your ears. Lift your tired head down, darling, lift it up into the air. And I will float to you in this crowded room. Let's get us out of here.
Street, through the gasket in your eye.
Augustine's Deshaun Fletcher, and it's CMJ week here, and which means we're giving you more music with more bands. This is the first time we've had two bands in one show. I want to welcome Louie and Mark from Damn Dogs. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you very much.
First, the most important question I just have to get out of the way. How'd you like the pizza?
It was incredible. Right. And we didn't expect it either, so it was double good.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the, like, what pushes bands over the edge. It's like, come on out. Well, we don't know. It's like, free pizza. Like, we'll see you at the restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
So you guys have been in New York for a couple weeks now, right? You guys were like a week or two. You guys been hanging out.
Just a few days.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys are gearing up for CMJ.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's pretty hectic, you know. You sort of from venue to venue, and 20-minute changeovers and stuff. But that's part of the fun, you know.
Yeah, it is. It is. Have you guys gotten a chance to see the city, get some good meals while you're here so far?
Well, I mean, we've been here a lot over the years, so, you know, haven't had much of a chance yet because we've been rehearsing every day.
We had Faux yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Faux. Yeah.
Where are your normal spots when you come to New York?
Normally, we go to Faux Bang.
Okay. Love that
on
place.
Is it on Mott Street?
I think so.
Yeah.
That, just so you know, that is the Faux place.
It is?
Go.
Oh, yeah. Good. I think we just stumbled upon it once.
Isn't it great when you stumble upon a place and people's like, oh, yeah, you nailed it. You got the right spot.
There's a place called Aurora, I think, here in Brooklyn.
Yeah, on it's a Grand and Kent or Grand
that's,
and what?
That's
yeah.
fun. And that's they've fun. Got another one in Soho too, I think. Right? No, Aurora, that Italian place we went to.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us about the band for those who don't know who Damn Dogs are? What are you guys all about?
Yeah, we're Damn Dogs from Melbourne in Australia. Louis, what do you reckon? Yeah, this is our first time in New York, so...
That's always exciting.
Yeah, for, as a band, you know, we've been here. But, you heard the tune then, it's kind of... it's a lot of our tunes are all quite varying, too. Yeah.
Well, I guess the concurrent theme is the sparseness of it all, you know what I mean? It's about sort of taking things out, rather than all of us playing all at the same time, you know, like... Very bass and groove orientated, but sparseness is definitely the sound.
Now, how did the band come together? Because it's always a good time when you guys are friends. You guys are like, let's play some music. Let's
yeah, pretty much. I mean, we all played in other bands and stuff together, and then we just thought we'd do something completely different and do this.
I mean, that's always a good time. It's always nice when you can just start and do your own thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is fun when we've switched it around. We don't have a drummer, actually, even though it sounds like we do.
Louis pretty much holds everything down. He plays keys and percussion and all kinds of things. Like, he's pretty busy up the back there, and drum machines and stuff. And yeah, so that's kind of a different thing going on back there.
Yeah, it's always, you know, it's always like sometimes sparseness and sometimes just getting on the road, throwing stuff in. You know, the fact that you can just throw stuff in a car.
Yeah, exactly.
And just like head on out, hit the road.
Yeah.
Now you're doing just CMJ, going anywhere else in the country, or is it this
one
back?
We played in Los Angeles about a month ago.
Okay.
We did a handful of shows. And we went to actually San Fran and San Diego as well.
Love it. But, beautiful time to be in California.
Mm.
Good food out there. You guys get some good meals?
Yeah. All the Mexican food. Taco trucks, man.
Yeah, I think when I was in San Francisco, I have to admit that I went to El Farolito twice in one day.
Well, see, for us being Australian, there's no real Mexican culture there, you know, like, and only recently has there been any kind of decent Mexican food that wasn't like kind of Tex-Mex kind of bastardized and pretty rubbish, really.
Like Ortega, Taco Bell.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. And that's what most people in Australia until recently didn't realize there was soft tacos. You know,
yeah.
You know, like, but Louis and I actually went down to Mexico once just to eat tacos for a week, just for the express purpose of eating.
Yeah, and even those tacos are different than what you can get in Southern California. Yeah. Like the Oaxacan, like the interior Mexican food is totally different.
Absolutely, yeah.
I remember. I mean, like the first time we sit down for like a real quesadilla or something like that, you're like, oh, I guess I have not been eating any of that type of stuff.
And everything tastes real. Like all the meat tastes real. Oh, it doesn't taste like, it's not bland, it's so flavorful.
I mean, I think Taco Bell's meat has tasted exactly the same for 20 years.
Yep.
Yeah, so how about this? Let's play another song.
Cool.
Play another song, then we'll talk some more about, I know Chris, your dad was a butcher?
Chris's dad was a poulterer, yeah.
A poulterer?
Yeah, like a chicken butcher, really.
Huh.
But yeah, specialized in chicken and you know, turkeys and goose.
Awesome. All right, so let's come back and talk about that, because I know we don't get a lot of Australian bands on here, and I'd love to talk to you guys about Australian food, because there's always this myth, like, every time we talk about Australian cuisine, people are like, I don't really know what that is. So we'll come back, talk about that, talk about the specifics of your CMJ show, and
cool.
I don't know, eat some more pizza, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we got Damn Dogs in the studio, and we got Love, another song off the Strange Behavior EP, the Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I was the fool. That was just Damn Dogs, Snacky Tunes, Love. Good song.
Thank you.
Different than the first one.
Thanks. Yeah, like I said, they're all a bit different. Yeah. That one we recorded in my house.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a recording studio in your house, or is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, well, it's not really a studio, it's just a house, but
you've got some pretty good
I've got some good gear, so you know, we recorded that at home.
So again, back to, so you guys just started recording songs like we're just going to do this, or was it a more formal, like, we want to start a side project and we're just going to do something, or we're going to start a new band?
First thing we did was record songs.
Yeah.
We hadn't actually ever played live. We hadn't actually ever played the songs. They existed as demos on computer. And then the first thing we did was go into a studio and make most of this EP. And then we did that one last song at my house at the end because we wanted to do an extra tune.
Yeah. It's a nice 5-song EP. It's a good. Four's a little. You know, five is like, all right, I'm going to sit down and put this on and not just select songs.
We were just shocked at how well Love turned out.
Yeah, exactly.
So we just decided to put it on, you know.
Well, you know, it's the fifth song that you guys wrote together, so you know, you get that groove.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Australian food.
Yep.
Can you give us a clear definition of what Australian food is?
It's,
being an English colony, obviously, like, real Australian food is just like meat and veg kind of thing. Like, it's pretty dull, like,
right.
You know, what the standard person would eat.
Exactly.
But it's a huge multicultural country, you know. Like, most people are half English, half Italian. You know,
right.
Yeah. So it's the immigrant groups that have really brought, like, modern Australian food to be what it is, really.
So if I went to, okay, so give me like a top restaurant in Australia that's doing good modern food, and what would I sit down to eat with?
There's lots of high-end Spanish places at the moment, and there's a few really good Middle Eastern sort of high-end places as well. But on the other side of that coin is there's awesome cheap Middle Eastern, Lebanese and Turkish places. To go to as well.
Yeah, in the neighborhood I live in, it's kind of, well, it's funny, Louis lives in the Italian neighborhood, and then, like, pretty much a big block up, and I'm in the kind of Turkish Lebanese neighborhood. Which has also got lots of Greeks in Melbourne too. There's a high-end Greek restaurant, like a, I mean, we have hats, you know, like they have stars, you know, so it's got like three hats. This
three, oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, like
three hats.
Yeah, like, yeah, chef hats, you know.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
It's like a particular newspaper is famous for, you know. But yeah, there's this place called Press Club, which I've never been to, but
yeah,
you
it's
have.
Awesome. Yeah, it's awesome. Really good. Yeah.
It's like a molecular gastronomy Greek restaurant.
Yeah.
Which really?
Is really weird, because Greek food is so hearty and, like,
oh, yeah, earthy. The yogurt, the meats, and the potatoes. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And then to you know, make it sort of make foams and
whatnot. Yeah, super lucky foam.
And, but you guys, I mean, what I do know about Australian food is that it's a lot of fresh produce, fresh meat, fresh, you know, like berries, fruits, vegetables, etc.
Our standards for food are really high, like a quality, you know, everything's of a high, really high quality, I find, more than anywhere else I've ever been, I think. I guess we've got a lot of room and not many people, so, you know,
just grow, just farms.
I mean, my family were sheep farmers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So did you, a lot of sheep's milk, a lot of sheep cheese?
A lot of lamb.
We eat a lot of lamb. Yeah. Like, you see lamb. If you go to a restaurant, you'll see lamb pretty much at every restaurant.
And also, to answer your question about Australian food, like, a lamb roast would probably be the most traditional thing that people would think of when they're thinking about Australian meals. Yeah.
Okay.
Because there is so many sheep and lambs.
Lamb is delicious.
Yeah, lamb's great.
And it's, lamb is, I mean, it's popular here, but it's more of like lamb chop, like rack of lamb. You know, it's like,
it'd be a special on a menu rather than a mainstay.
It's totally a special thing to get for lamb. But there, I mean, I'm assuming lamb burgers and things like that.
Yeah.
I've never seen a lamb burger.
I've seen them.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But then kangaroo, obviously, like, there's lots of great kangaroo dishes and stuff.
Is it taboo to eat kangaroo?
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay. The thing is, we don't actually eat enough of it, like, because they're culling lots of kangaroos because they're a pest in some farm areas and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're like you know, they can reproduce really fast, and they end up eating them in a good year where there's a lot of rain. They end up eating themselves out of food because they get to plague proportions. So we should eat more of it, and it's delicious lean meat.
Yeah,
you only have to cook for a small amount of time. We're probably the only country in the world that eats our coat of arms. We eat kangaroos and emus.
I've never had kangaroo either. What's emu like? It's like same.
It's I don't know.
I've never had emu.
I've had it, but I can't really remember what it was like. But kangaroo is kind of like really lean beef, but it's
pretty pungent and strong also.
Yeah, it's quite gamey, you know. Yeah.
I feel like it would do well.
It's really dark and deep red, rich red color.
Oh, okay.
Like, way darker than...
Yeah. It probably would do well in other countries with another name.
Yeah.
You know, if it was like Australian beef or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just...
Jumping ox.
Yeah. So let's talk details. Where can we see Damn Dogs this week at CMJ?
Well, we're playing tonight.
Tammany Hall tonight.
Tammany Hall.
Oh, it's a great venue.
Oh, yep. Great.
Were you ever there when it was the Annex?
I think I was, but I don't remember. It's in the Lower East Side.
Yeah, redid the basement, and it is amazing. The basement used to be, and excuse my language, a total fucking shithole.
Oh, good.
Like, just, like, I mean, it was good for all the wrong reasons, and, you know, like, for the late nights and hanging out, but if you ever had to hang out there in a sociable way, it was awful, and they just made it, like, really nice, and... Put a new sound system, and they have good food there now.
Yeah.
Those guys are real rad over there. They're doing a good thing.
Cool. And then tomorrow night is here in Brooklyn.
Yeah, Brooklyn Bowl.
Also another awesome place with great food.
We've heard, yeah.
That's got food too. Oh, with Duke Spirit are playing with us there as well. So
tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. Oh, you know what? I think I'm going to come.
Oh, cool.
Is it the school night thing?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. You know, my list of CMJ just all runs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone's going Brooklyn Bowl, it has a blue ribbon in there. They're also, it's the best.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been to Blue Ribbon. It's like a seafood restaurant.
Yeah, but this one's, that's Blue Ribbon Sushi. This is just like Blue Ribbon.
Yeah.
They have the best hospitality at Brooklyn Bowl. Like they treat you, they treat you so well. You get meal tickets and drink tickets.
Sweet.
But it's,
get down there early then.
Well, it's dangerous because the food is like not, you know, it's like fried chicken and wings and things like that.
Well, me and Louis got this thing where we can't eat before gigs, at least like 4 hours before gigs.
Then I would save it for after.
Yeah.
Because the kitchen's open really late, but it's totally worth eating. But it's like everyone who's tried to be like, well, I'll have a nibble of Blue Ribbon before I go on stage is just like a mess.
And then the last one is called Bowery Electric.
Yeah.
Which I think is a little joint. I think it's called Bowery Electric.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're playing all the hot spots.
That's on Saturday.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. So you guys are going to be...
And I'm DJing somewhere as well one night, but I have no idea where it is.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like a good spot.
Yeah. You'll know where it is. Everyone will be talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's usually, you know, say what you will about Twitter and things like that, but it really comes in handy in festivals, times like this.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for the pizza.
Of course. And we'll have to get you guys, when you swing back in, we'll have to get you guys to play some tunes.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah.
Some more pizza. Yeah. We'll fly you back. So we're going to, the last song we're going to end the show with today, off the Strange Behavior EP, is Very First Century, which is the single, yes?
Yep.
Yeah? Moment. Anything you want to say about it?
Enjoy.
And website or anything like that, or Facebook page?
Yeah, we've got a Facebook page and a Twitter page, just Damn Dogs.
Okay.
I think it's Damn Dogs Music.
Damn Dogs Music is the website, and just Damn Dogs for Facebook.
Awesome. All right,
word. It's one word.
Yeah, one word.
One word. All right, guys, well, don't spend too much time in this practice studio. Get out there and eat.
Yeah, we're going to get out there.
It's a lovely town to eat, especially a time like this. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you very much.
We are Augustine, Sean Fletcher. I'm Terry Diabolico, one half of your hosts of... Snacky Tunes, Finger on the Pulse, and we're back together again live next week with, I don't know, but we're having a special episode tonight at 7 p.m. with Wallpaper and a whole bunch of other people, so you'll probably get to hear, hopefully, the Snacky Tunes theme song live. So here we go, Very First Century, Damn Dogs. Thanks for tuning in.
this time.